I like science fiction. And almost all good science fiction stories function as parables or allegories to teach us something about ourselves and the world that we live in, to warn us about paths that we are on as a society or a culture, and that sort of thing. I don't want to make enemies of half the audience right now, but this is one of the reasons why I don't consider Star Wars a very good science fiction story, because it really doesn't function as a parable or allegory to teach us much about ourselves. It's mostly just entertainment. I like the story, it's just not what I would consider good science fiction in the true sense of the word. But one of the first science fiction films that made an impression on me many years ago was The Omega Man, starring Charlton Heston. Any of you guys remember that film? A few of you guys do. The last time I saw the film was when I was back in high school, so I'm sure I don't have all of the details quite right, but the story goes something like this. And this is all related to the teaching today, by the way, so I'm not just, you know, going off on one of my personal interests or something like that. In the not-too-distant future, a terrible disease which resulted from biological warfare was infecting everyone, and everyone was dying. Scientists and doctors all over the world were working feverishly to find a cure before the whole human race was wiped out. Well, thankfully, a doctor developed what he believed to be a cure for this awful disease, and he was on his way to let others know about it so that they could begin mass producing the vaccine when his helicopter crashed. Well, as he's laying among the wreckage, he's able to give himself the vaccine and then get to safety. The story then picks up a few months later. Everyone but the doctor is now either dead or has turned into these half-dead zombie-like people. You got to have zombies, right, in every story these days. Man, I don't get like the whole zombie fascination. It's amazing, but almost every story of any kind has to have either vampires or zombies in it nowadays. No vampires in this one. These zombie-like, half-dead people who will eventually succumb to the disease and die too. The doctor discovered, though, that by using his own blood for transfusion, he could reverse the effects of this disease on those infected and actually cure them. Now, there's a whole lot more to this movie than that. But that is enough of the story to serve our purposes today as our parable. See, the world that we live in is kind of like the world of that movie. We are all infected with a disease which has turned us into half-dead zombie-like creatures who are going to eventually succumb to the disease and die. But there is hope for us, because there is one among us who was never infected by this disease that the rest of us have, and through a blood transfusion of sorts, he's able to save us and make us well. You see, I told you. You can find the gospel almost everywhere. Well, let's turn to the Bible now to see the real story, where the disease is sin, and the doctor who can save us is Jesus Christ. We're in Hebrews chapter 5 this morning. We're continuing our study through the book of Hebrews. The largest section of the book of Hebrews ranges from chapter 4, verse 14 through chapter 10, verse 18, in which the author shows how Jesus is a superior priest to the priests and the associated religious system of the Old Covenant that was established back in the days of Moses. We looked at the introductory verses of this section last time in chapter 4, verses 14 through 16. And we're continuing from where we left off today with the first verse of chapter 5. So Hebrews 5, beginning in verse 1, it says, "For every high priest chosen from among men is appointed to act on behalf of men in relation to God, to offer gifts and sacrifices for sins. He can deal gently with the ignorant and wayward, since he himself is beset with weaknesses. Because of this, he's obligated to offer sacrifice for his own sins, just as he does for those of the people. And no one takes this honor for himself, but only when called by God, just as Aaron was." These verses are an elaboration on some of what we read and studied last time in Hebrews 4, verses 14 through 16. And verse 1 in particular states what we noted before, that the priest represented the people before God and represented God before the people. He was the mediator between God and the people, the go-between or the middleman. And a major portion of the priest's duties was to make offerings and perform various rituals at the tabernacle that were specified under the covenant provisions. And that's really what verse 1 tells us here. And then we're told two important things in these four verses of chapter 5 about the high priest and implications that go along with them. And they are these: that the priest is chosen by God, and number two, that the priest is a human being. And I want to talk about these two things for a minute. First, the priest is chosen by God. God is the one who God is the one who created the priesthood and the one who selected the one who would serve as priest. See, being a priest was not something that people chose for themselves, like going to the career fair at school, scanning through the list of possible jobs that are there, picking priest off the list, and then enrolling in the priest degree program at the local college. That's not the way it worked. There are stories in the Old Testament about people who tried to take on the role or responsibility of priest who had not been chosen by God for that role, and it always went very badly for them, which really serves to show the importance that God considered the role of priest. Some examples of people that did this. The first is Korah and his followers in Numbers chapter 16. They sought to appoint themselves as priests in the days of Moses out in the wilderness. But fire came down from the sky and consumed them, leaving nothing but little ash heaps where they had been standing. And then the earth opened up and swallowed everything that belonged to them. Severe. Another example is King Saul in 1 Samuel 13. Saul took it upon himself to offer the sacrifices which the priest Samuel was supposed to have done. And because of that, the Lord removed his blessing and anointing from Saul and his descendants as the kings of Israel. And he gave the kingship to another. A third example, Uzziah in 2 Chronicles chapter 26. King Uzziah, in his arrogance, went into the temple to burn incense, which was something that only the priests were allowed to do. And as he went to do it, leprosy suddenly broke out on his forehead. And he ended up living the rest of his life alone, unable to be with the rest of society because of his leprosy. The lesson in all of that? Hey, if you're not appointed a priest by God, then don't even act like one. Why did God create the priesthood and be the one who chose who the priest, the one who would choose who the priest would be? As we'll see as we get further into the book of Hebrews, all of these various things that were part of the old covenant, like the priesthood, were signposts pointing to Jesus Christ, our mega high priest, as we learned last week, who was coming to truly rescue humanity. See, this is one of the reasons why the priesthood was treated with such importance, and there was such severe judgment that would come upon those who failed to respect the importance and the sanctity of the priesthood, because it was a picture of the one true priest, Jesus Christ, who was coming to represent humanity before holy God in heaven itself. People needed to understand then, and they still need to understand now in our own day, that we are in such dire need that only God Himself is capable of saving us. We don't have the ability to rescue ourselves. There are none among us that are truly qualified to be the priest that we really need, who can offer sacrifice for our sin that would truly, really cleanse us forever and achieve real and lasting salvation for us. Not a person on the planet can do that. There's only one who could do it. The God-man, the incarnate God Himself in human flesh, Jesus Christ. All of this stuff in the Old Testament, in the Old Covenant that was brought through Moses, was really like a movie trailer, giving us a preview of what was coming. The second thing that we learn in these four verses is that the priest is a human being. And must be a human being. Now, this may sound obvious. You might be thinking, well, you know, who else would be a priest other than a human being? Well, there are some other choices. An animal, such as my dog, can't be a priest for us. Although, the dog is called man's best friend for a reason. Because when you really need someone to talk to, your dog can be a very good listener. Can't he? I mean, he's always willing to accept your side of the story. He never judges you. He never questions your motives. He's always the one who's standing or sitting in your corner with you. And you know, as we think about it, a dog would be a very good priest in many ways. The author of Hebrews has already made the point in earlier chapters that an angel can't be our priest. Angels were the administrators of the old covenant given through Moses. But as is pointed out here in these verses, the priest needs to be a human being so he can sympathize with our weaknesses as human beings. I mean, considering what angels really are like, not the little chubby cute guys floating around on wings, but I mean these severe, frightening, terrifying beings that they really are. When you consider what angels really are, I mean, they would be terrifying priests. There wouldn't be many of us left in a very short time. Angels wouldn't have any patience with us and our issues. They would just zap us into particles of dust. Oh, you got a problem with that? Next, I mean, we don't want an angel to be our priest. Our priest must be a human being. Why? Verse 2 tells us that he can deal gently with the ignorant and wayward. Well, who are these ignorant and wayward people? You and me. We're the ignorant and wayward people being talked about here. We are the clueless and those prone to wander off course that need a priest who can deal gently and compassionately with us. That word ignorant means lacking knowledge and understanding. Those who don't know, those who are unaware, those who are in darkness, those who are clueless, those who are spiritually blind. The word wayward means having a propensity to wander off course. Those who go astray, those who err, those who sin. It captures all of us. It reminds me of how Jesus saw people when he was living among us in Matthew chapter 9, verse 36. It says, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion for them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. We need our priest to be a human being. But having a human being as our priest is also a serious problem. The reason is given for us again at the end of verse 2 and in verse 3, because it says, he himself is beset with weakness. Because of this, he's obligated to offer sacrifice for his own sins, just as he does for those of the people. A human priest is able to sympathize with our weaknesses, but he's also beset by the same weaknesses that we have. He is in as much need of help as we are. He suffers from the same sins, from the same shortcomings, from the same character issues, from the same vulnerabilities to temptations. He needs to be forgiven for his sins as much as any of us do. And his capacity to love us, to forgive us, to be compassionate toward us, to be patient with us, to put up with us, is limited because he is a human being just like us. So what's the solution? We need a priest who is a human being, but a very special, unique kind of human being who doesn't have the same weaknesses, shortcomings, failings, problems, sinfulness that we do. Or, thinking back to the science fiction story that I told you earlier, we need someone who doesn't have the same disease all the rest of us do. And I have some very good news for us. There is someone like that. Jesus Christ. Let's look at what is said in the next verses. Verse 5. So also Christ did not exalt himself to be made a high priest, but was appointed by him who said to him, you are my son, today I have begotten you. As he says also in another place, you are a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. The author now changes from talking about priests in general to Jesus Christ as priest in particular. And we learned in the first four verses that the high priest must be chosen by God. People did not elect who their high priest was going to be, and a person did not appoint him or herself as priest. God appointed, God called, God chose the person to be high priest. And in the same way that God chose the people who would serve as priests under the old covenant, established in the days of Moses, he also chooses who the priest is going to be in the new covenant. He has appointed Jesus Christ as priest. Now, there's three things that I want us to note in these verses. First, Jesus did not exalt himself to the place of priest. He did not appoint himself to that position of priest himself. God appointed him as priest. In other words, there's no pride or arrogance involved in him taking the position of high priest. He wasn't out to make a name for himself. He gave himself in service for us. He took the role of high priest for our benefit, not his own. In Philippians chapter 2, verse 6, talking about Jesus, Paul writes, Jesus, who, though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men. And being found in human form, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Therefore, God has highly exalted him and bestowed on him the name that is above every name. Second thing I want us to note in these verses is Jesus is the Son of God, it tells us. Those of us who have been Christians for a long time can get so used to the idea that Jesus is the Son of God that when we hear it, we don't hear it. We need to hear it this time. Jesus was not simply someone chosen from the ranks of humanity to represent the rest of us before God as priest. He's not the best that humanity could produce. He's not the finest one among us in that way. That's not That's not what it was. Jesus is God the Son. He's God's own Son, His favorite, His most beloved and cherished in the universe. Now, knowing that, who do you think Dad is more inclined to listen and respond to? A hired hand like Aaron of the Old Covenant, or his son, Jesus Christ? It means, too, that although Jesus was a human being, He's more than a human being. He's divine. He is the God-man. He is that unique human being that we said we needed a moment ago, who doesn't have the same weaknesses that the rest of us do. He doesn't have our disease, which makes Him uniquely able to cure us, to save us, to rescue us. The third thing that we want to note in these verses is that Jesus is priest of a higher order than the priests of Aaron of the Old Testament. It says Jesus is a priest after the order of Melchizedek. Now, we're going to hold off discussing that in detail until we get to Hebrews chapter 7, where the whole chapter is devoted to this whole idea of Jesus being a priest in the order of Melchizedek. But for now, just know that it means that Jesus is in a whole other league from the priests of the Old Covenant under Moses and the line of Aaron. Jesus as a priest compared to Aaron as a priest is like comparing the San Francisco Giants to the Carmichael Little League team. They are two radically different levels of ability, so much so that comparing them is really a joke. Comparing Jesus to the priest of Aaron is a joke. Jesus is in a whole nother league. Verse 7 continues, and it says here, in the days of his flesh, when he was walking among us as a human being, in the days of his flesh, Jesus offered up prayers and supplications with loud cries and tears to him who was able to save him from death, and he was heard because of his reverence. Although he was a son, he learned obedience through what he suffered, and being made perfect, he became the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him, being designated by God a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. So the author now talks about how Jesus identified with us as a human being during his life on earth as a human being. Jesus didn't enter our world as someone with a position of fame or power or wealth. He didn't come as a world-famous celebrity of some kind. He didn't come as the king of a powerful nation. He didn't come with a bank account full of billions of dollars. Instead, he came as a baby, born to a young peasant woman in an animal barn in a small backwater town in a defeated little country. He never owned anything but the clothes on his back. He ended up being executed like a ghetto criminal. See, Jesus didn't take any shortcuts in his life as a human being. That's what's being said. He faced suffering and pain on a level that most of us can't even imagine. Being mocked and then beaten within an inch of death and then finally tortured to death. When he was in the Garden of Gethsemane, Luke chapter 22, crying out to God the Father on the night he would be arrested and then crucified, it says he was in such agony of soul that his sweat was like drops of blood. And he prayed, "Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me," referring to the suffering that he was about to face. "Nevertheless," he said, "not my will but yours be done." His submission to the will of God the Father was deeply profound on a level that I can't even really get my head around. But it says here, he was heard because of his reverent submission. His resurrection from the dead is the most powerful evidence of him being heard by God the Father because of his reverent submission. And he now lives forever, interceding for his people as their mega high priest. It says he learned obedience through what he suffered and being made perfect. These phrases can be confusing. I believe the author is simply saying that Jesus did not live a life of obedience in some kind of bubble, exempt from hardship and difficulty and suffering. Like we said a minute ago, he didn't take any shortcuts in his life as a human being. Instead, Jesus obeyed the will of the Father under the severest of conditions and circumstances. And that the incomprehensible level of obedience that he lived as a human being showed clearly that he is the perfect and complete priest, lacking nothing, able to fulfill the role of priest for his people like no one ever could. Closes by saying, and he became the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him, being designated by God a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. He is the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him. 1 Timothy 2:5, Paul writes, "For there is one God, and there is one mediator between God and men, the man Christ Jesus, who gave himself as a ransom for all." In Acts 4:12, Peter was preaching and he says, "And there is salvation in no one else, for there is no other name under heaven given among men by which we must be saved." Talking about Jesus Christ, the source of eternal salvation to all who obey him. Well, in closing, I want to collect together kind of the main points that we are taught here in these first 10 verses of chapter 5. It says that Jesus is the one who can really save us because he was a human being, able, or making him able to deal gently with our ignorance and our waywardness, with our weakness, with our sin. He wasn't an angel. As awesome as my dog is for me to share my heart with, he was more than my dog, too. He was a human being, able to deal with us gently, compassionately, with kindness, understanding. But at the same time, he was not beset with our weaknesses. He's a priest of a higher order than any other priest who has ever lived. He's in a class by himself, the order of Melchizedek. Even though he is the Son of God, he didn't take any shortcuts in his life as a human being. He faced a difficult life, full of suffering and pain, even willing to lay his life down for us in order to save us and to give us a new life. He's the perfect priest for the human race, making him the only source of eternal salvation for everyone. That's what those 10 verses tell us. For those of you who have made Jesus your priest, let this encourage you. And as we were told last week, give you the confidence to draw near to his throne of grace, knowing who your priest is. If you're here today and have not received Christ as your Savior, I encourage you, receive him as your priest. He's the only real priest in existence. All the rest, they're little league players. He's the only one playing on the pro level. The only one who ever did. He lives forever, interceding for his people as their priest.